Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 126 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's a live event from Trek Bikes in Clarendon, Virginia, that took place on the eve of DCCX, October 19th, a couple weeks ago, and it was a show with Ellen Noble. Ellen Noble came into town, and we had a chance to catch up in front of a live audience. So it was a cool experience to be able to have one of these live podcasts and actually record it and then be able to share it for you all now. And we will get to that in just a minute. But before we do, I want to tell you about Ride CX. Ride CX focuses on cyclocross specialty products like tubular tires and tape and embrication and pit tools. Check it out. You know, I love it when small businesses come to us at the Wide Angle podium and want to advertise. I really think that we are able to bring them to a focused audience of cyclocross fanatics. That's you people, and you all do a great job responding. You know quality, you know when you're getting a deal, and we're going to even enhance that deal for you at Ride CX by giving you a coupon code, actually a couple coupon codes for everything that they have available. And I say they, but really this is one guy. He's a master's racer, like most of us, and an enthusiast, participation in cyclocross. And the great thing that we love about cyclocross is it's very grassroots, and you can start from the bottom and grow up, and that's what's happening here. And on top of it, you're getting a lot of quality stuff that may not be available in your local bike shop, or you know, may take longer to get online if they have to special order things. This is here, it's ready in stock, ready to be shipped out at ridecx.com. So if you go there, ridecx.com, and you enter CXHAIRS5, that's the number 5, so CXHAIRS5, you'll get $5 off of a $10 order. That's kind of crazy. Go for that. And then if you use CXHAIRS15, so CXHAIRS15, you'll get $15 off of a $100 order. Both great deals. I want you to go and check out what they have available. I know we're sort of at that mid-season in the cyclocross year, but that's when it starts. You know, it's been a rainy season as well, so you may need new tubulars. You may need to stock up on embrication. So go check them out, Ride CX, and do just that. And then you can follow them at Ride CX, RIDECX, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, RideCX.com. Okay. The thing we're about to do is at Trek Bikes. I do want to just give a plug for Trek Bikes in general, but also, you know, today we watched Copenberg Cross. I watched it on the Trek Bikes feed, which was amazing. HD. I was hearing about people with these sort of denigrated Facebook feeds. This one is full on. Go to trekbikes.com. All you have to do, give them your email address, and then they'll send you an email. You click on that, and then you get the whole Dave season for free in high definition. So that's pretty awesome. Getting over to domestic cyclocross ruts and guts. I've been talking this up. I'm not going to stop. I'm telling you, this is one of the races that I've missed out over the years, and I'm making up for it this year. I'm heading out to Ruts and Guts. I want you all to do the same. The season with Nationals back in December, this sets up perfectly. December 8th and 9th, you can go to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, to Ruts and Guts. You can race there. You can get everything dialed in exactly how you want it. And then if you want, you don't even have to go home. You can just drive the 9 hours and head to Louisville and be ready to race for your national championship races that following week. If you're on the fence about Nationals, I just stopped by there this week to check out Joe Creason Park, and the changes from Pan Ams to what they're going to do for Nationals are phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to this event. We already know how much from Derby Cup and Worlds and every year how much Louisville gets behind cyclocross. The Louisville Sports Commission is so into cyclocross, and they really want to make this the biggest Nationals we've seen in a long time. And that's a tall order, because there have been some darn good ones in the past years. So They're up for the challenge. I want you all to come out for Nationals, but it starts at Ruts and Guts. Go to rutsandguts.org. Sign up December 8 and 9. There's a, even if you, you know, not racing, or even if you are racing, they also have a gravel road ride on Sunday, Belgian waffle bourbon ride. And yeah, okay, finally, before we get to Ellen Noble, I am really excited about this next one. I want you all to follow along with me. I've been editing my tail off here with video edits of all of the C1 races. I got Cincinnati all dialed up and ready to go for you all. And you're going to be able to find those at cyclocrosstelevision.com. And the cool news is that Max's Tires has stepped up and become the title sponsor for the rest of 2018, which allows me to get out to all these races, get them all filmed, get put the voiceover over them so you know what's happened. So we really, it gives you an outlet to really know what's happening on the domestic scene. It's something that there's been a little bit of a void there in the last couple of years. I'm trying to do my best to fill that for you. So they're all on YouTube. Go to CX Airs on YouTube, or even easier if you just use the URL cyclocrosstelevision.com. All of the Cyclocross Television episodes are up there. We got these new minisodes episodes that are just these short little C2 breakdowns of races. We did those from Cincinnati. I think those went over really well. So check it all out. Finally, Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, not only a podcast network, now a video network too, the Cyclocross Television, which I just talked about, also on the Wide Angle Podium Network, along with the Consummate Athlete, Honest Bicycle Program, Bike Shop CX, even the Slow Ride Podcast is there, and they got now the Slow Ride Reviews. They're branching out into other stuff, and it's awesome. And then all these shows are great. I would love for you to become a supporter of the network, wideanglepodium.com. Sign up, donate. You can give just once, or you can be a recurring member. That's what we love to see, is these recurring memories. We got stickers, we got swag, we got bonus content. I have a bonus episode I'm going to be posting up in the next week, which I think you guys will really dig, but you'll only be able to hear it if you are a member. While you're at wideanglepodium.com, you can buy coffee from Grimper Brothers. They are our coffee partners. We love those guys. Click on that link for the Grimper Brothers. It's a 1 pound of full Schleck coffee. Very tasty coffee. I love that stuff. $25 for a bag. Proceeds from that go right back in the network, right back into paying for those server costs and everything else that we need to pay for to make this network happen. And I can tell you, it's not inexpensive. So that's it. I know, a little long-winded, but there was a lot to cover in this episode. And thanks for sticking with this long intro. CX Hairs on Instagram and on Twitter. Again, go to the YouTube page, search for CX Hairs on YouTube, or also cyclocrosstelevision.com. All of these podcasts are available at cyclocrossradio.com. Feedback at cxairs.com. That's how you can get in touch with me. Let's talk to Ellen Noble. You know her, cyclocross racer, mountain bike racer, racing for Trek Factory Racing, CX Now and XC Later. Great conversation with Ellen. Always good to catch up with her. We are at the Trek Bike Shop in Clarendon, Virginia. We're talking about everything, and we're doing that right now.
And thank all of you for coming out, especially on a Friday afternoon if you're coming from DC like I did, you know, going against traffic, that's and making the effort to be out here, especially for our packet pickup. This is a big weekend for us with DCCX, so I hope all of you here we're going to see you for the weekend as well. And I want to start out by just thanking Trek and Trek Bicycles and the Clarendon Trek Shop for having us out here and hosting this event tonight. It's awesome when we get shops in the area who are willing to do these types of community events, willing to open it up, you know, and this is such a great facility that we can have this huge area to do our registration. You all were smart by getting here now, because there was a line that sort of wrapped around all these bikes when we first opened at 5, but it wasn't like you got any, you know, advantage for being here early. You didn't get up higher in the grid. You know, it was all the same. But no, it's so thank you to them and for being a sponsor of the race and continuing to support what we're trying to do, not only with DCCX, also with my own team, with Crosshair Cycling development team we're starting. And then also, larger than that, expanding the Trek Factory Racing mountain bike team and including the sport of cyclocross into it. And one of the positive things that arose from that decision is that we get Ellen Noble here on Trek Factory Racing. Hey, Ellen, how you doing?
Hi, Bill. I'm good. How are you?
We're going to pretend like we're just... Ellen and I talk a lot now, so it's kind of a different... Almost a different vibe when we're just sort of trying to chat for all of you. But I do, this is a good opportunity that we can sit down and kind of talk about what it's been like, you know, since not being cyclocross full-time or even cyclocross road full-time, going back to where you started, going back into mountain biking, and really, you know, not really sticking your feet into the water, but basically just jumping into the deep end off the 10-meter board. You can just sort of talk about
that. Do you want me to just start talking about that?
It's like we're having a conversation. That's where you say, yeah, Bill, and then you go into what it was like.
Yeah, it was... That feels like such a way to kick it off. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And I guess no better way to start than to just jump in about mountain bike season. For those who don't know, my name is Ellen Noble. I race for Trek Factory Racing, and I did my first professional mountain bike season this year with Trek Factory Racing XC.
Can I say just one thing? Just
yeah.
I do an introduction before we start talking, like before. Okay. Yeah. So I'm not that new that I wouldn't have told them who you are,
but
just in general.
No.
They all know because your name's on the sandwich board out front.
That was really cute.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
good.
Like that.
Okay, now continue about who you are.
My Uber driver probably saw that and was like, why is that girl that I drove here's face on that sandwich board? It's kind of weird.
Where am I dropping you off? Take me to where it says Ellen Noble.
A little narcissistic, but okay. To go back in, I did my first season of XC this year, racing at like a World Cup level. I grew up racing mountain bikes, but this was my first year racing on this kind of world stage. So I started out the season in Benelli, which is like one of the first big UCI races in the US. And I started dead last, and I didn't really realize just how dead last I would be until I got there. And I realized that like I was racing with people that were like doing their first UCI race ever. And I was like, but I've done this before. What the heck? But it didn't seem to matter because I hadn't raced in over a year. So that's kind of where it started. And I thought that I would be able to move through the ranks pretty quickly, which I did. And basically every race I was jumping hundreds of spots in the UCI ranking. But what I didn't really realize was that the UCI ranking didn't really affect my gridding for the World Cups. So even though I started outside of the top 1,000 and I was jumping to 800th and 600th in the world, only the top 100 raced the World Cups. So no matter how much I moved up through the ranks, I was still starting dead last at all the World Cups this year. So trying to move through an 80-person field against the best 80 riders in the world was... kind of a new challenge that I hadn't faced, that I had never faced before because my progression in cyclocross was much slower. So I was able to just kind of work through, and I wasn't racing the World Cups when I was trying to get UCI points. So this season was a much slower progression and a much greater focus on the long term. So rather than looking at trying to like win everything in a season, I was looking at, okay, I'm going to need to be on the front row in 3 years. And so that kind of changed. Yeah, that was a big change for me this year.
Just not even about the racing, just what always is still kind of fascinates me going from cyclocross, even at the highest level, to going to this mountain biking at the highest level. It's a completely different vibe. I mean, they are just different sports from the way that the way that the pits are set up, actually the way the technical zones are set up versus the pits, which are what we would call tents, so even the language is confusing.
Yeah.
But just what was your, you know, going into that, going to Europe, going to these World Cups, what sort of struck you as kind of that cultural contrast and what you're used to in cyclocross?
I think in cyclocross, even the top riders pay attention to the newcomers and whatnot. I think that in mountain biking, at least in my experience, it was the top riders kind of keep to themselves a little bit more. So there wasn't as much like, well, in cyclocross, I would introduce myself to people and they'd be like, oh yeah, I've like seen you at a race or something. And then you would introduce yourself to one of the top riders here and they'd be like, okay.
Yeah, but it's also, it's a much more monastic lifestyle. Like I know, so for us, we're on the staff side and we all kind of hang out each other with all day. And then we'll see riders for like an hour a day and they'll come out of into the light and go train and do all and eat. And then they disappear again. And then we see them the next day.
Yeah. And that's something that I've like not struggled with, but that was definitely transitional for me was I'm so used to everyone doing everything together in cyclocross. Like half the time your team is staying at the same hotel as the other seven trade teams that race at the same World Cup. Normally, because you're in the middle of, you're somewhere that no one else wants to be. So like it's, you all just kind of stay at the same hotel. But with mountain biking, as you said, it is much more isolated, I guess. It's like even riders on their own respective teams are in different positions, or not different positions, I guess, but are much more, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. It's almost more individual, where
individual,
there's a more family community. I mean, I know that happens. It's not to say that it's not like a family. It just definitely is different. I think it comes from even the type of training that's going on. It's almost more like road style. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was definitely a different culture, though.
I think it's easy to be more individual as well during like the warm months when it's sunny, because like you can get happiness from being outdoors. Whereas like when you're in Belgium in December, like if you don't have other people, you don't have anything. So I think that maybe that kind of is where it stems from as well. But yeah, so it is so much more individual with mountain biking, and it's not to say that it's not like it's not better or worse. It was just different.
You know, and you worked your way up, you know, top 20s by the end of the season. But any kind of like fandom in there when you're first out there, like Yolanda Neff, people like that. That's different for you. It's a whole different community to be racing with.
Yeah, I mean, I still kind of have that like fandom, which I don't know if that actually makes you any friends or not in the sport. When you're like, oh my god, I love you, and they're like, okay. But it's definitely my reality where I really do just like, I admire so many of the people that I race against, and especially on the women's side, I grew up like watching these riders and like watching them come up and get better and like see them from, you know, like when they were on their early teams to like being on these big pro teams like Yolanda and Emily.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, let's not even like swipe over the most obvious one. I mean, just racing with Emily Batty must have been, I mean, y'all are obviously friendly now, but just coming into that experience, it was kind of neat. Did a little bit of mentoring there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so lucky to have Emily as a mentor this season. And yeah, it was definitely like a big moment for me because I grew up idolizing Emily, of course. And she was always like kind of the rider that I looked up to the most, I think, especially in the current women's field. So to be teammates with Emily and be on Emily's team was just, I don't know, it was just such a big deal for me, and it's something that I've wanted for a really, really, really long time. So it was an actual dream come true.
Nice. Let's actually go back to cyclocross for a bit here, and even just, you know, we haven't really chatted that much since the end of last season, and you know, good season for you, but really capping it off with a great performance at Nationals. I mean, I think one of the best battles we've seen in a long time, you and Katie Compton out there. And now that you've had time to reflect on that race, you know, do you think back on it? What's kind of your takeaway from that day?
It's funny. So I try really hard not to be disappointed with rides, and I try not to like nitpick anything, but I can't help but look back at that ride and say like, really, you couldn't have found 4 seconds. Come on, it was a 45-minute race. Like, so I do, that is one of the rides that I look back and I'm like, that was really close. But I mean, it was a ride that was better than any ride I had put together up until that point. So I can't expect anymore. I was already riding kind of beyond where I had, especially given the year that I had had. That was super challenging and not really a good year for the most part. So I can't be too hard on myself. But yeah, I do look back on that and I'm like, because of the way that the last lap played out, I went into the last lap with 20 seconds behind Katie, so it felt like the race was pretty much over. So I was just like keeping the pressure on in case she made a mistake. And going into like the last feature on the last lap, she did make a mistake, and so it closed that gap substantially. So it went from being like an insurmountable gap to like there was a chance. So then, yeah, I just look back and I'm like, man, if I had gone just a little bit harder when that mistake happened, I could have been on her wheel. But it's that's not really who I am to like look back and be like, oh, it could have been.
But it's also, you know, had she not had that bobble and it was a 20-second deficit, you would have been like, awesome, second place. So it's like, you know, that carrot got closer, really sort of changed your perspective of it. But, you know,
I think that ride specifically, looking back now and laughing about the 4 seconds, only stings because I've had, let's say, 4 of like the biggest defeats in my career have been under 10 seconds. So world champs, second to Sana at Hama. Second to Voss at the World Cup and second to Katie at Nationals. So I've
It's
going to
change. you're going to get over that second place hump. And you know, if we look at the people who you listed who you are, you know, getting second place to, I think that you know, you're in pretty good company there. Especially, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about racing against Mariana Voss. That was a race that, again, you know, we look at that Nationals race and then we look at this race, you know, that was the standout race, I think, in the World Cup, the one that had the most excitement. You didn't know who was going to win. You know, you all put on this great show coming into the last lap. And the way I looked at it is you have Mariana Voss. You have somebody who knows how to win a bike race in any situation you throw at her. It doesn't matter. It could be mountain biking. It could be road. It could be cyclocross. She's kind of got something in her back pocket no matter what you try.
Yep.
And you tried pretty much everything, and it was, you know, just on that last lap. I mean, another one, and I know you don't want to dwell on it, but just sort of walk us through that last couple lap. And, I don't know if you could have done anything differently. I mean, what's your takeaway looking back on it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I could have done anything differently either, but I know that other people would say otherwise. But I think unless you're in that situation and unless you're racing in that exact instance of, like, literally trying to defeat Voss, I don't think that you can really say like what you would do, just because it is like such a crazy situation. Like the energy at the venue, racing at the Trek Factory with Voss on my wheel, competing for a win at the World Cup level, is like that's gonna play with your head a little bit. So going into the last lap, we were going by the pits, and I don't know who it was, but someone yelled like, "This is your race to lose," and I was like, "Challenge accepted." So I could tell like she was just riding like really slowly. I think that she wanted to play cat and mouse, but I could also hear that she was struggling to breathe a little bit, so I knew she was on the ropes. And so I just attacked one more time. I remember just thinking like, screw it, I'm just gonna go for it. And I just went all in up and over the flyover and into the off camber, and I could feel that elastic band stretching. But a good thing and also kind of a bad thing about that course was there was never really any like super prolonged pedaling section aside from the start finish. So I could pedal for a little bit and like get her on the ropes, but then she'd be able to come back like by recovering in the technical sections. So I think like, you know, I gave it all I had, but I didn't go soon enough to really keep that pressure on.
So you've had this, you can put the rest down there too.
Fidgeting with it.
For those just listening to this later, Ellen has a Sharpie that she is about to give herself a new tattoo. Okay. No, when we were talking after Charm City, and you know, you had two really different races at Charm City. You had the first day against Magli Rochette, where it was a battle between you two that was really strategic. You know, I don't think either of you were putting in as hard of attacks as you could. You really were playing a lot of cat and mouse, watching each other, and you were like super patient during that race and picked your spot and then made your attack. And you know, one of the first things when we chatted afterwards that you said is like, "Oh, I wish I had, you know, sort of that level of race strategy, even maturing from like
a month ago until then, you know, maturing just in getting more race experience, that you would have like put more of that strategy to work when you were in the World Cup.
Yeah, and it's funny because I remember saying that to you, and my coach was really happy with that ride, I think, and I definitely did race more maturely. But I actually realized after I say that, like, I didn't really have the luxury of being strategic because we had Evie, Katie, and Katarina, which, like...
Oh, for sure, right.
We had them close, like, we had them chasing us down.
Oh, that's huge.
And, like,
I didn't even think about
that,
yeah. They're
the three biggest, like... diesel engines in the field. Like if anyone in sauna, like if anyone can do like a last lap, like burn your house down attack, it's going to be them. So I was like, okay, we have to keep this gap open. So like we actually couldn't have played it much more strategically because we were going to get caught by them. And I don't race as well in a big group because like people start chopping you and I just want to be able to have my own lines. So I would rather try to roll the dice with Voss than be strategic and try to race for the win against a group of five. So yeah, that actually is different.
It is, and that's a great point. And we saw that play out the next week in Iowa where yeah. Evie is like a distant fifth and then in the last lap all of a sudden just picking off everybody mm-hmm. as she moves up there.
Yep.
And yeah, for sure, you didn't want, even though she's your teammate, you don't want her coming back at that point. You want to keep rolling.
Evie, don't chase down your teammate. That's what I wanted to yell. I wanted to be like, I got this one. Just hold back the group.
So, a nice start. So you were talking about how you weren't happy with your season last year. Kind of a stark contrast this year with a lot of great results. And it's still early in the season. You still have, you know, I mean, December is national, so it's a little sooner, but mm-hmm. how are you feeling about that? How are you feeling? I know like this is a rest week, so, and then you got Pan Ams in 2 weeks after Cincy. So do you feel like the ebbs and flows of the season are going how you want?
Yeah, I feel like the season is flying by. Like,
oh, for sure.
It's crazy. I thought this, when we were talking about this at Mont Saint Anne, I was like, cool, I'll go to D.C. in 100 years. That's yeah, right. Fine. And now I'm like, oh, my God, we're already in D.C. So, yeah, the season's flying by, but I'm gearing up for the next block of racing, which is Cincy and Pan Ams, and then we go to the World Cups. So we're going to get back into World Cup racing in a couple of weeks. And, yeah, it's just it's going by so fast, but it's going really well. And I feel like mentally I'm in a much better spot, which is like – training for me is really important, but like when I'm in a good spot mentally, it's really all that matters. Like I have been able to pull rides like out of nowhere if I'm feeling good, and my fitness will dissolve like cotton candy and water if I'm not happy. So yeah, I think I'm in a good headspace, and that's probably going to be the most valuable tool for me going into the like last two thirds of the season.
All right. I have a couple more little conversation points I want to touch on, but this is where I want to tell all of you all to start thinking about questions. I'm giving you fair warning, so we can't go away here with zero questions. It's, you know, it's not fair to us. We want to hear what's on your mind. So this is your chance to think about what you want to ask. And so during mountain bike season, I think one of the things that you can correct me if I'm wrong here, may have been a positive is that...
You know I will.
Yes, I do. is that from kind of a Ellen Noble as sort of social sort of personality, you're able to sort of like take a step back and just get into the mountain biking, and then it wasn't cyclocross, so it wasn't like all this other stuff going on. Now we're back in it. You know, we had the bunny hop the patriarchy idea that started last year, still going. You're sort of back in there. Is that right? Do you feel like at least mountain biking, you're able to concentrate more on that, and then more, it's more like socially out there, or does it just never stop?
It's a little bit of both. I think at the events themselves, it is much more like just kind of get in, get out, like get it done. Whereas like I'm certainly not doing any like event stuff, like yeah, like podcast requests at events or something like that. And I'm actually not even saying this specifically, but, you know, at like there's every race weekend someone wants to do something. Whereas sure. with mountain, like no one gave a crap whether I showed up or not aside from the team. So it was, yeah, there were definitely fewer obligations.
Although I have to say, Dan Jarvis, who announces all of the races, like, you were definitely on his radar. He was like, holy cow, there's a cyclocross racer out there. And he just, like, kept talking about you at these World Cups.
Yes, that was really fortunate. Who's the guy that does the Red Bull feeds? The two guys.
Rob,
like, would learn my name, and then he'd forget it, and then he'd learn my name again. But sometimes I'd hear him say my name on the feed and be like, I did it.
And then we have the conundrum of Bart Brentjens, who's a Dutch guy who evidently has never heard about cyclocross, which always just surprises me.
Yes, that is a unique thing.
They didn't know who Matthew Vanderpool was, so, you know, that they knew you. You're a step ahead of that.
Yeah, so it is different, but cyclocross is year-round, as I'm sure you all know. So, yeah, even if there weren't any mountain bike obligations, people always want to do different things all the time. And then, yeah, I'm trying to push my own, like, cyclocross stuff with junior women and whatnot. So no rest for the wicked in reality.
Just from starting, you know, and it is kind of this thing that has caught on, the bunny hopping, the patriarchy. What now that you've had that out there for a while?
Yeah.
Is there a bigger goal? What's the message? I know that you get, you know, and you have to deal with a lot. You have to deal with all the trolls out there. You have to deal with all the pushback, which you handle well. But, you know, what's the bigger message?
Well, it's funny. So, yeah, like a couple of weeks ago, I don't know what it was. I think I had like quite a bit of growth on my page just from the races and the media that came from it. So that meant that I don't know what it was, but like for a week, I was just getting hammered with people saying like the worst stuff to me. And I was like, is everyone doing all right? This is really scary. But to be honest, like the amount of positivity that I get like on a daily basis, just like seeing the bunny hop the patriarchy thing and how much people are pushing themselves, like men and women and like the whole WTF community, the whole thing. It's just like so, so, so positive and makes all the like, is everyone doing all right worth it? Because it really is. It really does just like warm my heart. And that sounds so corny to say, but it is the truth. So yeah, with bunny hop the patriarchy, it's kind of, I don't know, it's continuing to grow organically. I'm certainly not like growing it myself right now, but like people are buying shirts and supporting the cause of getting like scholarships and all this stuff. But I'd love to expand it into giving grants for women who are kind of pushing boundaries within the sport. So something that I would love to do is supporting, like women or trans racers in either like director positions or in like mechanics positions, just kind of in those like kind of male dominated industries is something that I would really love to see, but I'm just not there yet. It's so hard because I want to do everything and I want to support and like give love to everyone, but I can hardly make it here on time as is. So I have all these big dreams, and whether it's bunny hop the patriarchy or whether it turns into something else, I absolutely have that goal to continue to support people who are kind of pushing the envelope of what we have in this sport.
Yeah, and I think I do. I like the way that you handle it. Even with when I put up that photo of you from Mount St. Anne, yeah, and there was some dude on there going, "Oh, makeup and earrings at a cyclocross race," and I was like, "Well, my response was just like, well, A, it's a mountain bike race, not a cyclocross race, and B, and what do you care?"
I love
and,
that.
but your response was even better because then you went on to everything else that you had done, like
he was like, "Oh, yeah, you're wearing eyeliner." I was like, "Well, I'm actually wearing eyelash extensions and illuminator." So, but I did it with like a smiley face because I was like, "I mean, if we're gonna talk about what I'm wearing, let's get into it."
And this affects your performance? How?
It doesn't. It just makes me feel like a queen. Like I love it. I don't know. I'm like, I don't care what you wear. Don't care what I wear. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's, you know, and even what you're saying about like you talked about little controversy there with trans athletes, you know, where and the competition in there. But we also saw it in one, I think, silver lining that we've seen recently was the blow up of Jingle Cross over the announcing. And I think that we've already seen a big change in that. I mean, when you're at DCCX tomorrow, you see Angela Parada will be out there announcing our race with Nate Graham. And, you know, I know that Gloucester, you know, and other races up New England
Lydia
was out there announcing. So it's already affected change. So sometimes, you know, when we have that old guard and these things happen, I think that, and that makes me feel good, is that now as a community, we're like, well, that really stinks. And instead of just moving on, I think there it sort of pushes forward some change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even with all of the recent discussion about trans athletes and their place in the sport, I think, I know that right now, like, to such a gross extent, trans athletes are not being treated well in the media. People are being really, really, really hurtful in like a very unsettling way. And so like, regardless of your opinion about, you know, involvement in sport, I think that we need to recognize that they're people and that we should not just
and what
like,
was this a world champ or was it
world champs?
World champs.
Yeah, Masters world champs.
Masters world champs.
But I think regardless, it's really painful right now, but I know that it will facilitate change in a very meaningful way that I think could be, create a protocol for a very long time, whereas right now there is a lot of uncertainty and a lot of lacking in education in the media and in the sport in general. So I think that while I know that it's really, really painful for trans athletes right now, I think that this is hopefully going to be the catalyst to make kind of more long-term changes that are needed.
All right. Okay. This was the part I was talking about. Let me know. This is your chance to ask Ellen Noble. You can ask her what she thinks about the course tomorrow and how she would race it. Spoiler, she hasn't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Can you talk a little bit how you got into the sport and sort of your little biography?
So I started racing mountain bikes when I was a kid. Both of my parents were local elite racers. And they were kind of, they were the people that when they showed up for the ride, people were like, oh, crap, Tom and Sandy are here. They're going to like shred our faces off. So I started going with them just because I thought my parents were really cool, which I've come to find out is a weird thing to think as a kid, but I thought my parents were really cool. So I started going with them when I was like 7 or 8. And I always had like these crazy, like kind of Franken bikes that my parents would piece together with bikes from the shop, but they were always super sick. And so I started going with them and developed technically quite a lot, but I was obviously lacking in fitness because I was 8. So I started racing around then in the amateur category. So I guess what is novice now? And sort of developed through that. And by the time I was like 14, I think I was still racing mountain bikes, but our like XC races back then are what basically have become marathon races now. So they were like 3 hours and those were like XC. And so at 14, I was racing elite against like a couple of other women. But it was like, it wasn't really exciting enough to keep me interested because I was like, I think I was in like 8th grade or freshman in high school. And I was just like, I wanted something more exciting. Like I was seeing people going to like pep rallies for football and stuff. And I was like, how come no one cares what I'm doing? It's like, well, cause you disappear into the woods for 3 hours and you come back and everyone goes home. So I was just kind of, I was quite bored with it, to be honest. And I had won the elite like New England overall that year at like 14 or 15. And so I had like kind of progressed out of that, and like traveling nationally just wasn't even on my parents' radar at that point. So we were kind of like, what's next? So that year my parents had found a race actually in Northampton where I live now. That's a cyclocross event, the Cyclesport International. And they drove me out there and it was 3 hours. And by the time we had gotten home, so 6 hours round trip, I was like, guys, that was awesome. And I totally want to do that again. And they're like, you want to do it tomorrow? And I was like, yeah. So we did 6 hours round trip again to a cyclocross race. We could have just stayed out there, but, and it was like the first time I'd ever actually like really loved cycling. Like I grew up athletic. Like I wrestled and I played hockey and I ran and I snowboarded. I did everything growing up. And this was the first time I had truly loved a sport more than anything else, like more than the fact that it was just a sport. I loved it like for what it was. And I think it had to do with the fact that it was 8 a.m. It was 20 degrees out and there were 90 women on the start line. And for me, I was like, whatever this is, I want to be a part of it. And basically the rest is just kind of not history, but you know what I mean. Like, I just really devoted myself to cyclocross. So I did like a couple more races that season. And then the next year, I did a full season as an amateur, but I was too young to upgrade. So I did like the full amateur season. It was really fun because Emma White, who just recently switched to racing track, but used to race cyclocross for a really long time, she was like my ultimate rival. And she was also too young to upgrade. So we had like these crazy competitive battles for like maybe 8 or 9 races that year. So we had this super fun rivalry going. And then the next year I did my first season of Elite, and that was 6 or 7 years ago.
You're so old.
I know. I'm like, I can't do the math. So yeah, 2 years on track, 2 years on Jam, 2 years on Aspire. So this is my 7th year racing Elite. Yeah. But it's, I don't know. I love cyclocross more and more every year, I swear. And then going back to mountain was something extra special because of the energy around the World Cup events and like the kind of newfound challenge that I really love in the sport. But the energy with cyclocross is something that is just very different. Like, this kind of event is like, it's very special to me.
Yeah. So what was your motivation for moving to Trek? Was it to get back into mountain bike racing, or was it to get the support that you needed in order to progress in your cyclocross racing, or was it something different?
I mean, kind of all of the above, but I think the biggest thing for me, and I mean this genuinely, this isn't just like my media training response, but like aligning yourself with a brand that you actually like really believe in is very important. So I think like, especially in a time like now where we're seeing a lot of companies like, you know, you always see them, they like run those ads that are like, what was the one where I was like, I can ride with my boyfriend now because I have an e-bike, or whatever company that was. Like, yes. So like you see brands like those and you're like, oh, thank God that's not like, thank God that's not the brand that I ride for. So for a brand like Trek, who you can tell just by looking at the athletes that they support, like have really invested and believe in women's racing, it's like, for me above all, like that is so important to ride for a brand that respects you and like sees the value in what you're doing. It was like, that was the biggest thing for me. And then to see that they support athletes both in cyclocross and mountain bikes meant that I could continue to race cyclocross, which I love, and then continue to make a run towards the Olympics and XC. So having involvement on both sides was huge for me.
Yeah, and even more than that, I mean, this team that Ellen is on, I mean, it's kind of this hybrid team between the mountain biking team and also the cyclocross team. But mm-hmm. The cyclocross team is a Trek Factory Racing team, and it is a women's only team. It's Maurice, or it's Emma and Evie and Ellen. And you know, you're like, well, what about Telenet Fidea? They are on Trek bikes. I'm sorry, they are on Trek frames. Yeah. I got in trouble for saying bikes before. They're on the Trek frames. but it's not, and they're closely associated with the brand, but this is, you know, that they're supporting this women's team is awesome. I mean, I love, you know, being associated with that. I think it's a great thing. And I think that, yeah, having that support. So what is your European schedule for this year?
I'm doing 2 weeks in Europe in November for Tabor and Kokseide, and then I'll come home. I'll be in Georgia for a little while, and then I'll do nationals, and then back over for the rest of the season. So I'll do the latter half of December and all of January and a little bit of February. And
so that's the biggest. That's your biggest stretch, you know, as far as European racing goes. Yeah. Nice.
So you talked about scheduling. I know it's a little bit of way out, but we're all very stoked. Do you think that you might extend that cyclocross transition next year a little bit so you can come race mountain bikes in West Virginia?
So I don't want to confirm or deny that. I can neither confirm or deny.
I will tell you it's the same weekend right now as Rochester.
I know, Bill.
So that's probably still up in the air.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say, but I will say for sure that my schedule next year will look very different from how it looks right now. Just going into the Olympic qualifying years, I do have to kind of make some changes, but I'll absolutely still be racing cyclocross and mountain. How the cards fall, I can't say just yet, but it will mean that I'll kind of extend my mountain bike season into the early part of cross and then maybe take a break. So We'll see.
Yeah, so just to jump in here, just to explain a little bit, in for those who don't follow mountain biking, especially cross-country mountain biking, Olympic years is pretty much everything that these athletes work towards. I mean, the whole season looks entirely different than it did this season or even the year right after the Olympics, when there's almost like this, whew, and everybody just gets back to racing. Now it's about points. Now it's about qualifying for the Olympics, and it's a huge deal. I mean, that's pretty much the pinnacle of it. For cyclocross, we look at worlds, and we look at, you know, different series, World Cups, Super Prestige, whatever it is. For mountain biking, it's like Olympics first, and then everything else underneath that.
Even winning world champs the year of the Olympics is kind of like,
Yeah, for sure. Where a lot of other sports.
It's like, did you peak too soon?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how far down the list things are. It's like Olympics, everything else in the Olympic year. It's crazy.
Can you tell us about getting the Red Bull sponsorship and what that's meant?
Yeah, that was, oh my God. When I got the email, I cried. It was so big. For me, it was kind of the thing that I had always dreamt of. It's just such a huge, I don't want to say validation, but it was kind of this big thumbs up that was we like what you're doing a lot. So for me, the kind of process began through my former team director, Jeremy. And I remember when he was like, hey, so I just got an email, and he's like, what's the sponsorship that you said you always wanted? And I was like, Red Bull. And he's like, yeah. So I don't know, that was a really big moment for me. And just the way that it all happened, where I was like, it really was the sponsorship that I always wanted. And I really like what Red Bull as a brand is doing. And I love that. I don't know, they have such a huge focus on equality. And I think that they, can really elevate an athlete's message on what they're doing. And they've already done that for me a lot. So I think, it's super exciting, and I'm excited. We're in the early stages of it, and it's already been really, really amazing.
I'm just chuckling at my team director, Jeremy.
Jeremy Powers. You probably know him.
Any questions? Yeah. What's on your pre-race playlist?
Well, for all of the mountain bike season, it was exclusively Invasion of Privacy, Cardi B. But then I just recently decided not to burn out the playlist, so I've started listening to a couple of other things. So I have Stir Fry by Migos. I don't know who it's by. It's called Back It Up, and it's horrible. And then I have, obviously, Sicko Mode, and what's the one? Yes, Indeed, with Drake and Lil Baby. And then a couple of Cardi songs. So horrible hip-hop, to answer your question.
Is it Red Bull that has someone who will just make custom playlists to amp up other athletes when they ask? Do Red Bull does that?
Do you need to look into this?
I don't know.
They have someone whose job it is just to make any athlete who wants a really good playlist.
Whoa. That's kind of sick. I mean, I think that you're thinking of me, who can just make super sick playlists. That's also a Red Bull athlete.
What's when you and Evie now are racing together, what's the key for telling you apart now that you're both Red Bull athletes, both in the same kit?
So Evie has a really long braid.
That's what I go with. Yeah,
I
the
have
braid.
Blue hair.
Okay.
Right now, Evie's wearing blue shoes and I'm wearing white shoes.
Oh, there's a good
little,
one.
Sometimes,
yeah.
And then. If you really know how to tell us apart, my mom could tell us, I could tell us apart because I ride differently than Evie.
There's also only one of you other on the course because you're the other one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hopefully, at least Evie for the World Cups is World Cup leader. Oh, she's not going to burn. I don't know. We're screwed.
Okay. Good enough. Yes.
Yeah. What's it been like racing with a teammate?
So I will say having Evie as a teammate is absolutely amazing, and Emily as well, and Emma, having teammates is so fantastic, and having women for teammates is so much more amazing than I could have imagined, to be honest. But racing with a teammate hasn't changed at all because we don't really have strategy, especially I raced a season of Pro Road, so I could do it, but Evie is very much kill. She doesn't really she hasn't quite done the strategy thing yet.
That whole thing that you were thinking through, she's still at I'm not going to even pretend to do her accent. No. She's like, I start the race, I go as hard as I can, I try to get out in front of everybody, yeah, and then I just hold on until the end.
Well, she'll always tell me stuff. She's like, so at Worlds, I felt like people were getting too close to me, so I just went hard and then I won. And I'm like... I'm like, you're dripping in talent. It's so unfair. So, yeah, trying to be like, okay, so here's our strategy for today. I'm like, nah, let's just not, like, specifically don't kill each other, and then we're good. But having teammates is, like, amazing. It's so fun.
Have you ever tried skateboarding?
Is that a pointed question? So my parents built custom concrete skateboard parks growing up. So I used to skateboard a little bit. But then I got my skateboard stolen. It was super sick. It was a termite board. So like the grip tape, they had cut out like a bite mark. And then underneath there were like all these cool like termite designs. I wasn't amazing at skateboarding. And I've since gotten into BMX a lot more, probably much to my dad's dismay. He's probably like, why? But yeah, I definitely don't skateboard now because that is a huge liability and I'd probably hurt myself. But yeah, I used to skateboard quite a bit as a kid.
What, did you know her dad? That's Nick Vukovic. He's head of the Tony Hawk Foundation. So this was sort of a staged question.
Okay, yeah.
I'm giving up the ghost on that one. Yeah, all right. Any other questions out here?
BMX freestyle or BMX racing?
So I did race BMX as a kid, BMX racing, but a little bit of BMX. Okay, you can call it freestyle, but I like a B. Yeah, I mean, I go to them. Like, what do I do there? I don't know. But yeah, I get off the ground and stuff jumping. I'm way better at jumping than like I can't like do anything else at all, but.
Yeah, so Ellen, like, hitting these World Cup courses where it was, if they were, like, muddy technical turns, which seems crazy coming from a cyclocross background, but it's completely different, especially how these courses are set up. Those were the parts you were like, I am having trouble with this. But if it was just, like, these, like, insane, just death-defying rock features that you were just, like, dropping off of, she was like, I got this, no problem. And it was just like full on off of it, like not even looking at it. That was nothing. I think it was more of some of the other, and then those really long climbs.
Yeah, the climbs. But I don't know why, like it's so backwards, but I really struggled the most at, well, maybe there was a confounding variable there because I struggled the most at Albestadt, but it was also my first World Cup ever.
Oh, you were, as I said, like off that 10-meter board into the deep end for sure.
Oh, shoot. Oh, when you said off the 10-meter board, I thought you meant that 10-meter
yeah, the really
thing
high.
That I crashed off of.
Oh, no, no. I was talking, it was a diving reference.
Okay, yeah. I did dive at Albestadt. Maybe that was a confounding variable.
Awesome.
How do you manage to fit training in when you're traveling around and doing events
and things?
We set her up with this beautiful Trek Boone here so she could ride around. Ellen had never been to D.C. before.
Yeah.
So Libby Sheldon was nice enough to take her around. You saw the monuments and got the full D.C. tourist experience, except you did it on this great bike.
It was amazing. Yeah. So I asked if I could borrow a bike, and the shop kindly enough said yes. So this was like kind of extenuating circumstances. Normally I travel with a bike, but this is such a quick trip that I was like, could I just borrow a bike instead? But for me, it's my job, and I actually kind of embrace the challenge of it. Like sometimes when I'm in a place that's like not great for riding, finding a place like that's fantastic, like looking on Strava at the heat maps to see where people are riding most often, trying to find things where there aren't a lot of stops. I'm like, ooh, I'm curious. And I love like when I'm in any random country, trying to find a road that maybe no one else has been on yet, like that I'm with. For me, that's like a really fun challenge, and I love riding, and I feel like it's such a great way, especially like normally when we don't have a car wherever we are, like the athletes don't, we're normally relying on our soigneur to drive us places. So for me, if I want to see a place, then I'm going to take my bike out and adventure on it. So that's usually how I get training in when I'm traveling, is just kind of making it happen. And then of course, on a really long travel day, if I have to get up before 6 to ride, or stay up like past 9 to ride, I'll just take the day off because it's not worth it.
Yeah, and even, you know, and it's harder in the U.S., harder for cyclocross because it is more, you're more sort of self-supported sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got mechanics and stuff, but just from day to day, where in Europe, it's kind of cool. You roll into these World Cup stops and, you know, it's this moving caravan of different teams coming in, and you'll be like 30, 40, 50, you know, kilometers from outside of where the event is. And you'll see like these vans pulling off. Everybody will be getting their bikes off the cars, you know, from there. Mechanics and everything will just take off and go ahead. And then the riders are just, you know, strolling afterwards so they can get in that ride, you know? So that's a little different feel that you get over in Europe. We're good? Yeah, Dan.
So what's like the 5-year plan and the 10-year plan for you going forward?
Okay, 5-year plan.
I'm just curious, you know, I feel like we've talked a lot about like where you've come from, where you've been, where you're kind of going right now with the Olympics in 2020 and XC, and I'm just curious like what you think you're going to be doing in general, like, yeah, 5, 10 years from now.
So though we can hear it on the podcast, the question from Dan Chabanow, special Wide Angle Podium podcast network correspondent, is what the 5-year and 10-year plan is.
It's such a crazy thing to think about. I don't know. I mean, it is like honestly so hard to say. So I'm 22. In 10 years, I'll be 32. Like, I wonder. I mean, I guess, and it really depends on where the sport's going to be as well. Like, are things going to progress, or are we still going to be racing Rochester World Cups, Cincy, D.C., or, yeah, Charm, whatever. Yeah.
So, breaking news, Ellen Noble's racing D.C.
I'm not, and I specifically didn't bring
not this year.
Things.
No, not this year. I'm just saying you put it on there. Yeah, on the future. Yeah.
I specifically didn't bring certain things with me so that I couldn't race tomorrow. but, yeah, I mean, it's so hard to say. Like, for me, the Olympics is the dream. And then, yeah, maybe going again to the Olympics would be really cool. So that's 6 years from now. So that takes up a bit of time. Like, I'm still not inside the top 100 in the UCI mountain bike ranking. So I feel like there are a lot of rankings left to climb at least, but I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of dreams in the sport, and I also have a lot of dreams outside of the sport, and I'd love to get my master's and do a lot of big things like kind of in the world and meet a lot of people and do a lot of cool stuff. So I don't really know where I'm going to be, but now I'm sweating. I'd like to get my master's in public health. Did I hear a yes? Yes. So I don't really know where I'm going to be, but I plan on racing for a really long time and continue loving it forever. But I don't think I'll race as late as a lot of people that we know, because I think like the precedent has been set that people continue to race late 30s into their 40s, but for me starting so young, I think it means that I could see myself retiring younger than some, but absolutely having quite a long professional career is the dream. That didn't answer the question at all, but that's fine. I'm sweating now, so thanks, Stan. I have no idea what I want to do with my life.
All right. Been about an hour. I think that's, you know, Ellen's gonna hang out for a little bit. I think we have some cards. Yeah. So if you want her, she'll be available to chat. But thank you all for coming out.
Thank you so much.
An awesome crowd. Thank you for. I want to thank Trek Arlington, the Clarendon shop here. One thing for you all to know is that if you're going to DCCX, stop by that tent. If you haven't gotten it already, they're going to have gift cards. I think it's a $20 gift card, so you can bring it back here. Come back when you're not like doing an event and not picking up packets, and just shop around here. You know, this is a great shop. They're great bikes, and I think it's a great addition to the cycling community in this area. So come back here, take them. They got awesome mechanics as well. It's a great place to take your bike to get worked on. So thank you to Alex and Ben and the whole staff for staying late for us and staying open. That was awesome. I appreciate all your help. They're going to be there tomorrow as well, doing neutral support at the race. Follow Trek Factory Racing XC on Instagram, and Ellen rides bikes, loves bikes. I'm going to get it wrong.
Likes bikes.
Likes bikes. I 0 for 3. Ellen likes bikes on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah.
Likes bikes because it rhymes.
Got it.
Seventh grade me thought of that, so I feel like explaining it makes it so much worse.
Fantastic. Okay, thank you very much, everyone.